beyond the first few bars, or miniatures. Some things I'm content to guess. Colour in a calyx tip. Is it gold or mauve? A girl or a boy? Patience was so simple then. Waiting for the clematis to open, to purple on a wall, the bud to shoot out stamens, the jet of milk to leave its rim like honey on the bee's fur. But patience, when the cave is sealed, a boulder at the door, is riled by the scent of hyacinth and the blue behind the stone, the willow by the pool, where once she sat to trim a beard with kitchen scissors, to tilt her hat at smiles, at sleep, at congratulations. And a woman, faced with a lover grabbing for his shoes, when women friends would have put themselves in hers, no longer knows what's virtuous. Will anger shift the boulder, buy her freedom and the earth's? Or patience, like the earth's, be abused? Even nonchalance can lead to courage, to conception. A voice that says, oh, come on, darling, it'll be all right. Oh, do let's. How many children were born from words such as these? I know my own were. Now learning to repeat them, to outgrow a mother's awe of consequences her body bears. So now that midsummer changing shape has brought in another season, the grape becoming raisin, hinting in a nip at the sweetness of a clutch, one fast upon another. Now that the breeze is raising sighs from sheets, as she tries to learn again, this time for herself, to fling caution to the winds like colour in a woman's skirt, or to borrow patience from the stones in her own backyard, where fruit still hangs on someone else's branch. Don't ask her whose, as if it mattered. Say, they won't mind, as you reach for a leaf, for the branch, and pull it down. The speaker in this next poem is a friend of mine who fled Iran during the war and found political asylum in Germany, where he is now. And he tells this story of this rather extraordinary character who he didn't know, but he just sort of met twice at a 10-year interval, once in Europe during the Shah's time, when people were coming to the West for one thing or another, and once again just shortly after the revolution, when they were all going back again. It touches on my sense of the diaspora of Iranians in the West, and I've been told that there are as many as 3 million, possibly. The poem is in three parts, and there's a Farsi phrase in it, which was the battle cry of the soldiers in the war with Iraq. You probably saw them on telly, you know, doing all that stuff in their jeeps. Marg bar Emrika, and it means death to America. Rice. 10 years later, I recognize his profile in a Tehran cab. You see these teeth, he said, leaning across the passengers. What became of me? I see him silhouetted in dazzle as the tunnel ends on the last lap to Frankfurt, his hand on the window's metal lip, his cap in the other, circling like a bird, then loosed on the wind, beating a tattoo against the wires as I watch him reach to the rack for his case, send that too, struggling through the window, socks and all. I have come, he declared, to start at the start. Now, a decade later, he asks, you see these teeth? He bares them in the light to show how short, how straight they are. What became of me? You wonder why? His fist emerges from his pocket, clenched. I eat it all the time. My hand is never still, like a swallow at its nest, going in, going out. Not a grain escapes. He fingers his moustache. I even check in wing mirrors. See how it's worn my teeth right down? His hand unfurls, dabs at the proffered air between us. Please, have some. What, raw, I ask? It's rice, he urges. Rice? 2. I have fled on mules, the star of Turkey in my sky, to start at the start. I have come like sleet with Mary in the dark, swum into hedgerows by the line. Gifts of weave and leather tucked in polythene for friends already fled or free are dry. Will they harbour us, we wonder, 10 years, a revolution later, towerless from swollen rivers, chanting Mag Bar Emrika? 3. The cabs still carry passengers, my mother in her black chador, my sisters among soldiers, now and then a face blasted like a cake. They have granted me asylum. I write plays. A friend I love in London has hung the Kurdish mules I brought her on the same hook as an old sitar she never plays. When she dusts them, she thinks of me and of rivers. I told her of the man I met twice, once in a train, once again in Tehran in those early days. What days they were. Oh, well. Her sister lives near Washington. Her husband, an Iranian, works for the Department of Defense and in real estate. Comes home to scan the post, its leaders on Japan, po-faced as she snatches victory from jaws set ever closer as they wing towards Potomac. Well, that's my family who lives quite near Potomac in Bethesda, Maryland. And some time ago, I had to go and visit my father. He's there with his other family, my stepmother, my half-sister's brother, their little children, and so on. And unfortunately, he had throat cancer, and he was going to have it operated. And I got there just shortly before that. Bobo Mustafa. He circles slowly, and the walls of the room, this Maryland cocoon, swirl as though the years were not years but faces, and he, at 80, in his warm woolly robe, with the last slow waltz. Children, he would say, truly love me. And I have always, always loved children. It's true, she'd say, coming through the arch. Sarah June, you love Bobo Mustafa, don't you? Do you love Bobo Mustafa? Or Momongiti, huh? Here, eat this. For God's sake, woman, do you want her to choke? Come, Sarah June, dance. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. He circles slowly, the child on his shoulder nestled like a violin, and the ruches of a smile on the corners of his lips, as though the baby grow beneath his hand were glissades of satin. Wunderschön. Das ist wunderschön. He lingers on the umlaut he learned as a student on a scholarship from Reza Shah, and on the lips of a Fraulein, whose embouchure lives on in him, takes him back through all those years, through marriages, children, reversals of fortune, remembering how in wartime foodstuffs left his home for hers. Manna from Isfahan, sweetmeats from Yazd, dried fruit from Azerbaijan. He circles slowly on paisley whorls that once were cypress trees bowing to the wind, as though these perfect Moslems were reflections of his coattails lifting on a breeze from the floor. "I swear to God," he blubbered, only days before his laryngotomy, "I was a good man. I never stole. And if, and who can say, you never had the father my other children had. God knows it wasn't in my hands." "How is he?" they whispered in doorways as I buried my butt ends in beds of azaleas. Months later, he writes, "I can't eat good and sleep good." He never could, holding up Der Spiegel in the small hours to the lamp. And now he circles from room to room with a grandchild for company, who step by step outstrips him as he learns, relearns to talk. Da-dum, da-dum. Da-dum, da-da. A poem called Earl's Court. Like everybody else, I once had a bedsit in Earl's Court. And that was a long time ago. And not so long ago, I went to a series of workshops at the Poetry Society, which some of you will know is in Earl's Court. And it all came back. And on one particular journey, there was this chap sitting opposite me in the underground train. And these things sort of got collaged into this poem. Earl's Court. I brush my teeth harder when the gum bleeds. Arrive alone at parties, leaving early. The tide comes in, dragging my stare from pastures I could call my own. Through the scratches on the record, oh, vieni, vieni, I concentrate on loving. I use my key, no duplicate of this. Arrive alone at parties, leaving early. I brush my teeth harder when the gum bleeds. Sing to the fern in the steam, not even looking. Commuters buying oranges, Italian vegetables, bucket flowers from shores I might have danced in briefly. I use my key, a lost belonging on the stair. Sing to the fern in the steam. I wash my hair. The tide goes out, goes out. The body's wear and tear. Commuters' faces turn towards me. Bucket flowers. A man sits eyeing destinations on the train. He wears Islamic stubble, expensive clothes, two rings. He talks to himself in Farsi, loudly like a drunk. Laughs aloud to think where life has brought him. Eyeing destinations on the train, a lost belonging, talks to himself with a laugh I could call my own. Like a drunk, I want to neighbor him, sit beside his stubble scratch, turn his talking into chatting. I want to tell him I have a ring like his, only smaller. I want to see him use his key. I want to hear the child who runs to him call, Baba. I want to hear him answer, turning from his hanging coat. Bia, Baba June, Bia. Oh, vieni, vieni. When this South Bank complex was first built, I remember it, and my father visited London at the time, and I brought him down here. I was a drama student, I think, and I wanted to show off the National Theatre and have him be very impressed and admire it. And so we stood on one of these concrete terraces, you know, surveying the scene, and he looked round, and all he said was, rather bitterly, "Well, it's all very well if you've got water." And, well, he's a civil engineer, and he spent his life battling to build roads and railways across Iran, which is not a very water-rich country, nor a very green one. And this is, in a way, an anti-green poem. So I miss the colours. Evergreen. It was past green fields and pines the Jews were cattled, and the last thing her witch's eyes could see, 13 million pairs, they say, was the green of the hill turning away like a mother turning to take her children home. And I have lived with green in playing fields, neighbors' gardens seeping poison through the fence, ground elder flaunting height and health where color should have been. The colours of my childhood, needed more than ever in a land that has adopted me, that turns me grey. While the dress my mother danced in, polka dots and flounces, circles on its own, sad as old-time vaudeville. And camel lilac of the slopes where shepherds' lives meet poppy every day, has settled on the leaves of war, and every leaf has turned. Even blues are not the same, of tiles, of domes, of skies too dazed for blue, or of shadows, mulberry blue, in the room you enter blinded, learning how to see again gloom becoming someone dear, a grandmother who gives you grapes she has quietly washed. And white, like all the colours of the world raising home, hazy as the verandas you half remember, is something to avoid in a land where no one's hands are clean, where dust is never sand, but more a mirage no one even yearns for, intent on lawns. I just want to read from a long sequence, which is called Plant Care. Plants and gardens are just a sort of running motif. But it's subtitled A Poem for the Change, and it's about this time of life, which I think is very much a change, especially in your relations, in your family, when you start mothering your mother and your children become men and women and so on. From Plant Care. You can drive the devil out of your garden. You can scold him away like a loon. But down by the pool where the eggs float, the frogs croak, you will find him again with a jam jar, a crowbar, where the raspberry staked is pulped to a stain and strained for a raspberry fool. You can drive the devil out at the gate, brandish a spell or a spoon, down by the hedge with a knapsack, with a switch and a swash of the flies on his legs, you will find him again with a matchbox, like a magpie, with a pebble or two for the straggling branch where the tire swings. The raven brings bad news. You can flush the devil out of his lair, hang garlic and sprig on the wall. But deep in the heart of the rosebush, the canker bud, the run of the blood that is silenced by the fear of the clock in the hall, you will find him again in a snail trail, a fairy tale, where the gold of his hair is the holy grail, a myth he will make his own. You can drive the devil out of the dark, wake clean and fresh for the dawn. But when sunlight falls on the lavender walk, where the trail of the scent is as frail as the dent in the sweet pea, the sweet talk, he will flutter, move a moth wing, a white lie that flies in the face of the truth that is plain as the nose on his face that defies you, denies you, turning away to a shoelace that strays to remind you, in the snap of a stalk that will find you, the devil walks behind you in the garden of your son. And finally, a poem for my grandmother. Rubaiyat, fertel oju. Beyond the view of crossroads ringed with breath, her bed appears. The old rose covers death has smoothed and stilled. Her fingers lie inert. Her nail file lies beside her in its sheath. The morning's work over, her final chore was breaking up the sugar just before siesta, sitting cross-legged on the carpet, her slippers lying neatly by the door. The image of her room behind the pane, though lost as the winding road shifts its plane, returns on every straight, like signatures we trace on glass, forget and find again. I have inherited her tools, her anvil, her axe, her old scrolled mat, but not her skill. And who would choose to chip at sugar blocks when sugar cubes are boxed beside the till? The scent of lilacs from the road reminds me of my own garden. A neighboring tree grows near the fence. At night, its clusters loom like lantern moons, pearly white, unearthly. I don't mind that the lilac's roots aren't mine. Its boughs are, and its blooms. It curves its spine towards my soil and litters it with dying stars. Deadheads I gather up like jasmine. My grandmother would rise and take my arm, then sifting through the petals in her palm, would place in mine the whitest of them all. Salam, dochtare moheman, salam. Salam, my daughter lovely as the moon. Would that the world could see me, Tel Ojun, through your eyes. Or that I could see a world that takes such care to tend what fades so soon.